I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, ex-Scotland international and adopted Frenchman, Johnny Beattie. And we're going to be joined shortly by France legend. And Johnny, your partner in crime, I think, judging by how much time you're spending together nowadays.
Best mates.
Mathieu Bastereau is coming on for a chat about his own career, Fabien Galthié, where this current France side are in their evolution. Plus, of course, we'll be analysing what went wrong in Marseille as France were humbled by Ireland and what might happen as they travel to Murrayfield this weekend. You've been busy, Johnny, at the start of this week. We had a weekend off, didn't you? How was it?
Oh, glorious. not sure my missus enjoyed it any more or less than a normal weekend when I'm away working, but mate, it was just nice to be able to sit, have a beer, watch Six Nations weekend Friday night, then all Saturday. Bit of post-traumatic stress disorder, bit of the old PTSD after Scotland's performance on Saturday. France on Friday night. It wasn't all easy watching, but it was just really nice to be detached, sit down, relax, have a beer and enjoy it.
A cracking weekend to watch as a casual fan or as a keen rugby nose like yourself, but from a French perspective, it was not good. So this is supposed to be one of the best France sides we've seen, at least for a good long while, but that was their worst home defeat in the championship for 110 years since 1914. So Given some of the sides we've seen in between that were quite ordinary and didn't lose by that big a margin, what went wrong? And is it a case of this Ireland side is probably one of the best sides we've seen in the tournament for a good long time as well? But from a French perspective, yeah, what happened?
I think pre-World Cup, people in the Northern Hemisphere wanted to see Ireland-France as the final. So that was the game that people wanted. Two teams in the Northern Hemisphere, top of their game, flying. Ireland had been on top of the game for maybe 36 months. You know, number one side in the world, France, resurgent, new coach, new generation of players. It didn't happen. And for France and for French supporters, they didn't get the home World Cup win that they wanted. They didn't get anywhere near as far as they wanted. So I think for a lot of people, this was, you know, this is the chance to show the revenge. This is what we wanted. Take all that rage out. The physical, the psychological, the scarring for the players. This was their chance to start with a bang. But if there was one team for me that you didn't want to play against in the opening game of this championship, it was Ireland. Extremely well organized, federation run. So players are rested, they're fresh, they're ready to go. Really well coached, top class individuals. And given that context against the French, who have lost Thibaut Giroud, their physical prep coach, they've lost their backs coach. They've lost their forwards coach, Karim Ghazal. Everything behind the scenes had kind of shuffled against the uncertainty of we've just lost this home World Cup. And I think that that game against Ireland, who were exceptional, like let's not get away from that fact. Ireland were great and played very, very well and were smart in how they knocked France back, didn't allow them gain line, kept them on the back foot. And some areas of France's game were absolutely disastrous. Like, look at their lineouts, 7 lineouts lost. Like, when was the last time that you saw a French side do that? But that comes from new coaches coming in, new systems, new personnel. Gabriel Ag started as well, who we haven't seen in the international circuit for years. So there's all these little things that went on behind the scenes. It was a sort of perfect storm that was left to brew. And then the performance and the result was catastrophic for French fans, for the team, and for French rugby in general. So it hasn't been a great week. The backlash over here has been fairly monstrous, shall we say, to say the least. And they're not happy. And look, this now leaves Fabien Galthié. Game coming this weekend at Murrayfield. This is the first chance potentially under his reign. Yes, they've just had their first and worst home defeat in 110 years in the championship, but the first time potentially they lose 3 on the bounce, they probably weren't ready, I would say, physically or mentally, and they were made to look very average.
We'll come to some of the backlash as we go through the episode, but we got to talk about the red card, obviously. We don't know what would have happened if they'd have remained with 15 men. Paul Willemse is obviously a friend of the show, and you kind of mentioned it last week, how much he'd be wanting to finish on his own terms and the emotional side of things. So it was tough to watch that, but he made two errors that were just big tackle technique, tackle height errors, weren't they?
Look, he's a big physical imposing presence. And I mean, that, like, you can take what we talked about it previously, but wanting to make your mark is one thing, but getting it right, especially in that position and the type of play that Paul's renowned for, big physical clear outs. And he missed that World Cup because of injury. He wanted to make an impact. He wanted to make his presence felt. He just got it wrong twice. And that happens, right? People get it wrong. But again, that just compounded the scenario that already wasn't looking good for the French side. You look at all the components, you know, defensively, like the try they shipped where Jonathan Dante's basically left clutching straws. They weren't getting their folding right. They weren't their numbers. But then your line out is then even further destructured. Your scrum and your maul is underpowered. So, like, Paul's red obviously had a big impact on the game. There were less left to play for probably 60 minutes of that game with 14 men, which doesn't help. But yeah, just sad for him that his return ended on that note, a red card. He probably misses the next few games. And you've now got Manny Miafu, you've got Pasola Tuilagi coming in, Alagahu as well from Toulon, who looks like he might be on the bench this weekend, hasn't been named yet, but he's been training with the squad. So yeah, just very disappointing for him that his comeback went in that manner. It was really sad to watch.
And we'll come to where France go from here a lot more, obviously, with Mathieu Bastereau shortly. But do they need to go back to basics a little bit, or is that too simplistic? Because they were built, this France iteration, on a good defence, a good kicking game, those kind of basic skills that you can rely on when there are big pressure moments. And that all seemed a little bit off against Ireland, who obviously are the best drilled side in the world, arguably. But that Sean Edwards defence just seems like it's a little bit misfiring. They've conceded four or more in four of 81 games, Sean Edwards, with Wales and France. Three of those have come in the last five matches with France. So there's something going on, isn't there?
Yeah, but then it's a continue. We talk about this all the time. That's the beauty of rugby and sport, is that you're continually trying to evolve. I mean, you cannot win a game of rugby if your line out, like, the statistic chance of you winning a game of rugby if your line out is at 50% is nigh on zero. So, like, you have to sort your line out. Your scrum, they weren't getting any dominance or penalties from that. Defensively, that's the really interesting one. You're a man down, everyone's exhausted, but you have to also credit the Irish attack. The ways that they opted to get their first phase options, you know, simple plays like from scrum, they were attacking blind sides, getting behind the French pack, pinning them back, getting them on the back foot, and then never allowing them that upper hand. Once France were on the back foot, they never got a chance to sprint off the line and come up and make dominant tackles. So the Irish attack was also very cute and very effective. But there are simple elements of their game, even things like Antoine Dupont not being there. And again, I don't think he would have made that much of a difference in terms of the general game plan, because they were so much on the back foot and they had no ball. But his kicking game, you saw how Ben White's kicking game had a massive effect on Wales in the first half at Cardiff. Antoine Dupont relieves so much pressure with his kicking game when he's there. So yeah, line out, simplicity of being back to the full complement of 15 blokes, getting over a gain line, simple templates that they use so well. But like, ultimately the weekend, they had no decent ball to play off. And you'd expect back to 15, you also would expect a big emotional reaction, because classically any French team, whether at top 14, Pro D2, National or International, that loses at home, you're poking a bear, you're waking a beast, you're making a team very angry, and you can guarantee they will come out with an emotional reaction this weekend and they'll want to set things straight. So yes, back to basics, but across the board, they have to be much, much better, because that's what we're used to seeing, right? That's what we've seen since Fabien Galthié took over, is incredibly high standards, well-drilled, line-out, scrum, starter plays, multi-phase, and defensively. Also, their kicking game, very pragmatic, but they were out-kicked as well by Ireland. So every single asset that they were out-fought, out-worked, or out-thought by Ireland, and they'll need to raise their game for Murrayfield this weekend.
Out-kicked, and also in defence, do they have issues under the high ball? Because South Africa exposed them. I mean, there were a lot of high bombs in that quarterfinal, but a couple of tries came from them, and again against Ireland.
But this is what I've been saying all along about playing. If you're playing against a blitz defense, there's no point running into it. Unless you can knock them back on the first phase, your best option is to kick. And what we've seen is South Africa at the World Cup, exploiting backfield. And we saw as well Ireland like opting to run the ball back 50 meters, then going sort of Gary Owen high ball and creating 50-50s in the backfield, where we saw Damian Penno struggle a little bit. Moefana, is Biai Barre going to come in this weekend? I don't know. Thomas Ramos as well. Like, all these guys will be under pressure. So teams have seen now different ways of exploiting or targeting the French side, but it's up to the French side, as we said, to continue to evolve. It's a big old physical game of chess. Get smarter, find different ways to attack and defend properly and work your way into the game. So yeah, they're going to be attacked in different ways. That other teams have now got their number in certain elements, and it's up to them to improve.
Right, we'll get Mathieu Bastereau on very shortly to get his take on what happened in Marseille and where France go from here. Look ahead to that Scotland game at Murrayfield, a lot more. But there was a busy round of top 14 action as well at the weekend. So let's have a very quick chat about that and see potentially if that's where your meter moment of the week comes from, Johnny.
It wasn't from the top 14.
Any mentions?
Mate, have you seen Antoine Dupont's offload?
Yes, that's what I thought was coming.
Oh, outrageous. Antoine Dupont against my old side, Bayonne. And again, 7 tries they notched up. Antoine Dupont was playing at 10.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the boys were exceptional. Rumat, Jack Willis, Richie Arnold, all imposing, bonus point win. But there's one phase of play, and again, we'll share it on our stories on Instagram, but he charges down Teigbergen in the backfield, picks the ball up, and then no look out the door. I mean, nonchalant as you like, pass to Pitaki, who basically jogs over to dot down. But all Antoine Dupont, the work, the skill set, the belief in his, and again, he probably could have walked over himself, but he just flicked into Pitaki, like sublime piece of skill. But that isn't my meter moment of the week, Tim.
You mentioned he was playing 10, Johnny. Did you see the clip as well of him sat in the number 9 spot in the change room and Grau has to say, move along one, Antoine. Would you have left him there, wouldn't you?
Yeah, mate, it doesn't bother me. Again, that's just scrum halves being scrum halves. Mate, you're in the wrong seat. It doesn't matter. But Antoine, like, clearly he's in at halftime. He looked like in a world of pain as well, like physically exhausted. And, you know, you've got your normal place where you sit. He's normally in the 9 and he comes in and Paul, hey, mate, like, you're 10. Can you just nudge up? Imposing themselves, these scrum halves. But yeah, ridiculous. Mate, my meter moment of the week is from a new kid on the block and a moment he had after the game. I thought he was absolutely phenomenal. Again, for people watching rugby in France, he's probably a little bit of an unknown, but Joe McCarthy.
Yes.
I mean, he was monstrous. And I, again, not watching Leinster that often, you know, you think Ryan, who co-captain previously at the World Cup, you think he's going to start. But Paul O'Connell and Andy Farrell have other ideas. In comes Joe McCarthy. And the way that boy gets around the field, how he carries, how he impacts, his work at the line out, his steals, he was exceptional. And again, listening to the French commentary here, they're like, who is this kid? Because he was just that good. Everything he did sort of touched the gold. So worthy of the Man of the Match award. But the moment that I thought was touching and very nice, you might have seen this, he gets presented with his Man of the Match award. And his brother's in the stand. His brother's got Down syndrome. And he's over time with his family, celebrating the win and, you know, picks up that medal and drapes it around his brother's neck. And I thought that was, you know, a really nice moment. The performance aside was phenomenal. But to share that with your family that are over to see you win in Marseille against France and then to give that to your brother, I thought was very, very cool. So that is this weekend's meter moment of the weekend.
Hard to argue with that. Hell of a performance and an emotional moment with it after the game. That was Johnny's meter moment of the week, and meter is the world's number one wireless meat thermometer, recently making over 20 million cooks better with their game-changing app and completely wireless Bluetooth meat probe. You can use it on a barbecue, in the oven, or in a pan, and you can get your hands on one at meter.com. Plus, you can get 10% off any full-price item. All you have to do is enter the code FrenchPod10 at checkout. That's FrenchPod10, and you get 10% off any full-price item at meter.com. Very quickly on the top 14, Johnny, because we want to bring Mathieu in. Bordeaux won away in the big one on Sunday night at Toulon. First ever win at Stade Mayol.
It ain't great for Toulon at the minute, mate. We're not going to talk to Basta too much about Toulon because I was down, and again, we'll chat about what we've been up to, but I was down with him in Toulon yesterday, which was Monday. And yeah, it ain't great. They should have won that game. I mean, Bordeaux are very good and they hung in that game, but interception try from Madosh Tambwe. How quick is he, by the way? He hasn't had much game time this year because of Penno and Biai Barre at Bordeaux, but he was phenomenal. Deporter, the outside centre, scored at the death. But if you look back, mate, in the manner of the tries, like Toulon have the ball in Bordeaux's 22, they set up a maul to basically kill the game. There's 65 seconds left. And they spew it out the back of a maul. Bordeaux pick up three passes. They get down the wing and they win the game. Deportes wins it for Bordeaux. I mean, it's historic for Bordeaux, but there really is a little bit, I don't know, it's a wee bit crisis nature at Toulon at the minute, but it's a bit schoolboyish and how they lost that game and the type of tries they're conceding. So yes, Bordeaux were exceptional. They hung in the game. You look through that squad, Tatafu, Tapuai. I mean, they have some phenomenal players. Deportes is going to be an absolute star as well. He actually came out yesterday and said, disappointed to be released by France. I still want to play in the Six Nations. I've got what it takes. Like, totally backing himself, really confident. But for Toulon, mate, it's not great. They just don't look settled. They don't look cohesive in what they're trying to do. And that's another loss at home. So all is not well. I'd imagine this week there'll be a few meetings. If you listen to Danny Brennan, they should probably go to the beach bar. They should probably have a few head-to-heads and sort themselves out. But a huge historic for Bordeaux. I mean, it's historic. It's very, very cool. And you look through that team, Tammy Funa, Kane Douglas, Tapua, like some of the names they've got during the Six Nations weekends. They're an outrageous team on paper. So well done to them.
And they are now level with Stade Francais and Toulouse on 41 points at the top of the table, because Racing have led the table all season. They were well beaten at Perpignan, weren't they?
They were a bonus point for Perpignan as well. So that's a big old win. Very impressive for them. The other one that stood out this weekend was the away win for Cast in Pau, which I didn't see coming, but there's maybe a shift. You had Popelang, who's been playing 10. He moved to fullback, and that left Louis Lebrun coming back from injury to step in at 10. Kokaji and Botitu, they were phenomenal in the centres, and Santi Arata was a menace, as he always is. So a big result on the road for Cast as well, 44-33 away from home. That's a big old result for them. So yeah, it's always interesting, these Six Nations weekend sides that don't lose too many people. They sort of manage to squeeze these wins out when other sides are losing a few more players. And yeah, bit of a shift in the table. So be interesting come the end of the Six Nations window.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Right, let's bring our guest on now, and we can have a chat with former Six Nations Grand Slam winner, top 14 winner, three-time Champions Cup winner, Mathieu Bastre joins us. How you doing?
Hello, I'm good, and you?
Thank you very much for joining us. We'll come on to France shortly and a bit about your career as well, but you've been spending quite a lot of time with Johnny recently, haven't you? So has he been treating you well?
Yeah, well, he's like my second wife actually, because we work a lot together. Yes.
I feel more like his agent, to be honest. I feel like that's more the maîtresse and agent. That's it. Mistress and agent, we'll take that.
Johnny was telling me that yesterday he had you playing the bagpipes, which is interesting. But I also want to hear about when you went to the Moulin Rouge, because the thought of you and Johnny doing the can-can together is something that most people can't get their heads around. How was that?
It was very physical, very physical. I didn't expect that. I think I just coming for a chat in the Moulin Rouge because it's a famous place in France. And when I saw the performer, I said, whoa, we are in trouble. And she show us some skills. I said, whoa, why? I understand why I stopped my career in May.
That last thing, I think for anybody that knows the Moulin Rouge, you don't go to the Moulin Rouge expecting to have a conversation. You go expecting for it to get physical in one way or another. But it was great fun. I mean, yesterday as well, I mean, playing the bagpipes on the beach in Toulon, that was also a very nice experience and a good surprise.
And how is Johnny with the bagpipes, Mathieu? Because he's Scottish, so I'm assuming that he's really good with the bagpipes. He can play a tune, yeah?
Yes, he's good. He's good. I think it's just, you know, second skin, you know? It's easy for him, very easy.
Put it this way, Basta and I are the same level. That's all I'm going to say. And that was my first time, that was his first time. Jesus, harder than I thought. Like, I kind of took it for granted as a bit of a national sport, but like my lung capacity, clearly I have a lung capacity of a couple of crisp packets because it's hard work, really hard work. We also had Phil Fitzgerald. Don't know if you remember Phil Fitzgerald. He came down to join us. I played with Phil. We had one test together, played for Scotland A against Georgia in 2008, but he played for Toulon for like 15 years.
Yeah.
He's now a lawyer, still working there. Lovely guy. And he came down and joined us for lunch and a bit of piping as well, because he's a real piper.
Yeah, when he came in Toulon, he was in the academy, and he just fell in love with Toulon, and he stayed. He played for the senior team. He was captain, two-time French champion of the second division, and he's still here, and he helped. The club sometimes when we have some bad guy doing some commission, UPC commission, he helps some guys.
Well, what he's alluding to is when there's a disciplinary panel for Basta, which has happened a few times, Phil's the one that represents him, which is quite nice.
Yeah.
Excellent. We've covered the can-can, we've covered the bagpipes, we should probably talk rugby. So Ireland are a well-oiled machine. We know how good they are. But what did you make of the game in Marseille from a French perspective?
We was in shock. We was in shock because we all know it's going to be a tough game. But I think after 5-10 minutes, we was all like, oh, it's going to be very hard. And because we didn't have ball, we were poor in defense. It was very, very difficult. After at the halftime, we said, oh, we are very lucky to just, you know, 7 points to the Irish boys. And sure, after the red card, we say, oh, we can't win today. But I'm sure with 15 players, 14 players, it's going to be the same result because Ireland was in another level.
We were talking about it before you came on, but Ireland was probably the worst team to play against as your first game after the World Cup. Do you get the sense there's maybe a little bit of a hangover for the players, both mentally and physically, after their World Cup exit?
We didn't have this feeling in France because we was, you know, good in the Champions Cup. And we said, oh, I think it's a chance, it's the best occasion to switch on new things after the lose in World Cup, and it was a good opportunity against Ireland, but I think it start changing 2 weeks before the game when the media start talking every day about the quarterfinal every day. Oh, do you think the pain after the lose against South Africa, the players still thinking of that, the supporter. The climate was changed. I think it was very difficult for the player to stay focused on Ireland when all the people around the player ask about South Africa.
And Fabian Galthié has obviously done a very good job with this France side over the last 4 years. They were so close at a home World Cup. They were playing great rugby. That's just one game, but he will obviously feel the pressure this week. You know him. Is there a danger that things will all implode? He will do certain things to get the players' backs up, or is this just a one-off and we'll see a backlash this week and France will be back to their best?
You know, in France, it's very different because, you know, when we lost a game, we won't change everything. And we forgot it's the first game of the Six Nations. You can always win the Six Nations. I think the confidence on Fabien Galthié changed a little bit, but if we win in Scotland, nobody talk on this loss.
They're more critical because they've got higher standards, because they've been spoilt. Again, maybe that's a bad word to use, but because the French team has performed so well, they're used to those high standards. So when there was a dip in performance at the weekend, there was a big reaction over here from the media, from all the written media, from all the, like, from social media as well. All the comments and supporters were really harsh on the French team. But there must be an appreciation as well, Mathieu, for the rise in standards that the French team has had over the past four seasons, because, like, we've had like different eras under different coaches before, and it was a difficult period for French rugby. Whereas This is just a one-off game, but the consistency in performance under Fabian has been much better, and it has been well received, right?
Yeah, and we say in France we have a short memory. Me, I was here when it was very difficult for the French team. We finished maybe four, five of the Six Nations. It was a terrible situation for the French team. And Galthié arrived with a young generation. And during four seasons, you know, they put the French team in the position all the amateurs in France want to see the French team. So after one game, you can't, ask a revolution, change the coaching, bring back some player, out some player. It's too easy. It's a new adventure. Okay, it's the same coach. Maybe 80% of the player was in the World Cup, but it's a new cycle. But in France, we are not passionate. So.
And Johnny's been coached by Fabien Galthié and has told us what he's like. So from your point of view, Fabien was your coach, wasn't he, right at the start of your career at Stade Francais, and then towards the end as well at Toulon? So give us an insight into what he's like as a coach and as a man.
Fabien is maybe the best coach I had during my career. Me, give me the opportunity to play in top 14 when I had 18 years old in Paris. And I was lucky because at this moment in center, you had Liebenberg, Messina, Stefan Gla, there was Mirko Bergamasco, they were all in a national team. And me, I just come from my young team of Massy in third division. And he gave me the confidence, and I start my first game against Toulouse. I think he's the best technician I know. I had a lot of great coach like Bernard Laporte. Bernard Laporte is the best I know for leading the players. You know, leading the men. You, after one speech of him, you want to go to the war for him. The management is very different. It's why I think a lot of people have confidence of Fabien, because they know he's the best. We are not in danger. And this game against Ireland maybe show us what we don't want to see, the problem on the high ball.
Johnny, what Mathieu says there echoes exactly what you've said about Fabien Galthié, the best coach you've had, technically brilliant. But just listening to that comparison with Bernard Laporte, perhaps man management is the area, one area perhaps, where he might not be as strong as some other coaches. So in that respect, this will be a huge challenge this week, won't it? Because he'll have to manage those players and get them back up.
You have to manage those players, but I imagine, and I imagine Basta will feel the same, like there will be a big internal reaction from this group of players in that they've had that big disappointment at the World Cup. Now I think everybody was waiting for a reaction to see something in Marseille. It didn't come. Now I think from the player, and that doesn't have to be Fabian that drives that. I think that from the players, from Greg Aldrit, from the captain, from the senior players group, from Gael Ficou, Joe Donti, they will all want to show a different face this weekend, a different side of their game and prove something. And so I imagine, Matthew, for you as well, after having watched that game and that loss against Ireland, now the French side, they will expect a big reaction. Surely after losing, after having lost at home, there'll be a dangerous and different animal at Murrayfield this weekend.
Yeah, for sure. You know, since 4 years, it was like a fairy tale. It's like a fairy tale. No, everybody was behind the team, the fans, the partners. Everything was perfect for the player. And now, I think it's the first time this team are under pressure of the press and all the people, you know, who love this team. So now they have to show their character. But me, I'm not afraid. Yes, I'm confident they're gonna show another face. But we have to be humble, because we're gonna play Scotland, and Scotland have a magnificent team with my man the Scottish Messi, yes. Scottish Messi, the center Chupulutu, woke me up at the Challenge Cup final. I didn't take a contact like that a lot of in my career, but it woke me up. And they have a lot of good players, lot of talent. So it's gonna be a good game. Me, if I play for Scotland, I think they lost against Ireland. They play very bad against Ireland, but I think this is a good moment to play against French team and put him under pressure. I think the first 15 minutes will be very important, because if we are under pressure and under the high ball, we'll start lost collision the ball. You start thinking about last week. You say, oh, maybe the same things, and it's very different.
So if you were Fabien Galthié, what would you be saying to your group of players, and where do you think you could apply pressure to this Scottish team?
I think we are the best when we have the ball. Play with intensity. We have the chance to have some magical player like Penaud, Ramos, Jalibert. So let this man play. I know the tactic is very very important, but when you have this they have talent in the team. Just make sure they are confident. We watched the game in Wales for the Scotland team. We saw the second half when Wales put the intensity and the passion. It was hard for Scotland.
You mentioned him there, Damien Penaud. We love talking about him because everyone has a smile on their face when they talk about Damien Penaud. He went past Serge Blanco and Philippe Seller at the weekend in terms of the most tries for France in the history of this tournament. You played with him at the start of his France career. Give us an insight into what he's like as a bloke, because he sounds like a real character.
He's a very funny, funny man. He's like, he plays with no pressure. He just wants to come, play, and enjoy the play rugby. It's like that. So sometimes you play maybe against the All Blacks or England, and in France you have a lot of pressure. He's still smiling before the game, always joking. I was like, whoa! I was like old school before the game. you know, all the day, stay in my routine, talk to anybody. I was like that. And this generation, before the game, smiling, play card. In the beginning, I didn't understand that. For me, there was I was like, oh, they don't care, maybe it's not normal. But now I have some regrets, you know, before the game. I don't have good memories before the game because I was in stress. And now I say, oh, maybe if I was like him, maybe I can say, I can maybe tell you a good story before a game. When I did a joke with him, when maybe I put some mustard in the shoes of player. But me, I was old school, you know.
You talk about mustard and Tim will be like, what's he talking about? But like in my first meetings at Montpellier, so Fabian Galthié would have been the coach, the boys were stealing like ketchup and mustard from the canteen. And so when Fabian was giving like chats at the front of the room on like a Monday and Tuesday, boys would be squirting ketchup into like the flip-flops, the back of flip-flops. And then when they suit up, the ketchup and mustard goes everywhere. Like that's a classic, happens everywhere in France. But you wouldn't do that for risk of getting shot on a Friday or Saturday, because that was disruptive to the game routine. But you could do that on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, if that makes sense. But yeah, just differences in the way we're brought up in different parts of the world.
Before we come on to talking a bit about your career, Mathieu, this weekend selection will be interesting, won't it? Because friend of the show, Paul Willemser, is obviously going to be missing. Romanta Fofana is still out. Would you start Pasola Tuilagi?
Me, yes, because I love this type of player, but he's young. I think we have to keep a process with him and don't burn him too soon. He still learns, so let him time, join this Six Nations, learn, and maybe this summer you give him a starter role. I will be happy if he starts, but I don't want they burn him too soon.
So that's the future and the present. Let's talk a little bit about the past now. You're newly retired, 54 France caps. Do you have a favorite game, a favorite memory from your career?
I think my first cap against Wales in 2009. It was a crazy story because I wasn't on the squad, and one player got injured during the week on Tuesday, and me, I finished the training with Paris. I was supposed to go to school, but I was tired. I said, oh, I don't go to school. And my coach and my president start calling me. I was scared because I said, oh, they know I didn't go to school. It's me. I'm in trouble. I didn't answer. I said, I'm thinking about what I will say to them, you know, the next day, or I'm sick or something like that. And after, I say, no, okay. I call back the coach, and I say, oh, maybe because he won't tell to me, he wants me to play this weekend. And he say, oh, what are you doing? I say, oh, I don't feel good. maybe I'm sick. He say, oh, you're sick, so you can go to the French team. I said, French team? He said, yeah. They need you. One player is injured, so you are called for the French team. I said, okay. French team. Oh, and I was in panic, in shock. He said, oh, you feel better now? Yeah, I feel better, yeah. But the game was perfect for me. I played with, I think, one of the greatest center in the history, Yannick Jouzion. Everybody was nice with me. I didn't, when they called me, I said, oh, maybe because at this time, they don't call 30 or 42 players. They call just 23 players. So I know I'm going to play, but I didn't know I'm going to start. So maybe one training session, And he gives the team. I said, oh, okay, it's something serious. But yeah, one of my best memory. And after the, for sure, the Grand Slam in 2010, because I realized what is it to win something with the French team. I remember the, when I was a kid and I watched all the players, Dourte, Dominici, Fabien Pelouse, all of my idol to this and me, and the, now I'm the same place.
Very special. And I thought you were going to say your favorite memories were actually just beating Scotland, because I'm fairly sure we played against each other six times and I won none and you won six. So that was no contest as well. I mean, your international career was phenomenal. Grand Slam, what an achievement. But then also on the club level, I mean, it was the club side of everyone's dreams that you played with. You started with Stade Francais, but finishing with Toulon, essentially the barbarian side of the club landscape, playing with Johnny Wilkinson, Matt Gitto, littered with stars. You won the Champions Cup three times. So what was that like?
I think I'm the maybe I'm the luckiest player in the history, because in Stade Francais and Toulon, I played with maybe the best players you can have. In Stade Francais, I played with Sergio Parisse, Juan Martin Hernandez, Christophe Dominici, players like that, and some league legend like Marc Gasnier. And when I signed in Toulon, I was a little bit nervous, because when you play with, you know, you have to play with Johnny, Matt Gitto, Brian Abana, all of these legends, they won the World Cup. I felt very small, very small. I just say it's a, well, I think it's a good occasion for me to learn from them. And it's why it's what I am. It's what I did. For me, it was my best memories in my career. Every time I go to training, I learn something. And me, I remember I was the youngest in the team, and I have the same sensation when we, you know, when you coming out of the, and just before you go on the field, I just watch around me. I was like, whoa. It's a dream, because you play with the 1 to the 15, 30, 23. It's all of a legend. So I was lucky to be part of this generation.
Very modest. I think they would all say they were lucky to play with you as well. Give you the ball, get on the front foot, steal
of
the
course,
ball back.
Yes, of course, yes. Of course, yes. Of course, yes. They was lucky. When sometimes we had a bad situation, they give me the shit ball to me.
We're too old, Mathieu. Here's the ball. Get us over the front foot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, we are blocked. Oh, basta. Give the...
Absolutely. And you talk about learning, just very briefly. We all know you as a world-class international centre. And then at the end of your career, you clearly embrace that learning because you become a back rower. So just talk us through how difficult that is. We know you went through a lot of injuries as well towards the end of your career, which must have been mentally very difficult to get through. But physically, that transition from going from a centre to a back row as well, that shows a lot of character to do that.
Yeah, it's a different rugby. It's not the same when you play backs and you play forwards. It's not the same thing. And I remember after my first game, I said, oh, I have to apologize. A couple of times, I scream on you guys, because it's very difficult, because you have to lift, run to the rock, and know the call in line out, know your role, go everywhere on the pitch. It's like a marathon. I put a lot of respect on the forward now. For me, I was like in school, you know. It's so different back and forward. And me, I was happy to learn something new at this, stage of my career. And it was a good opportunity. When they asked me if I want to play back row, I said, nah. I was like, oh, you do respect me because you think I'm too old. I don't have the level anymore to play center. So I was like, yeah, they don't respect me. But after I take the time to think of that, I said, yeah, maybe it's a good idea because I'm less faster than before. And if I want play longer, maybe it's a good deal for me. And after a couple of training, when I try, I say I like. So let's go.
I like. Show me the 4-year contract, and I'll sign. I like it.
Yeah,
I see what happens. Yeah. But I love it as well. But that's the thing. It was a massive. Because obviously outside center is an incredibly difficult position to play in. But your biggest, I think the biggest thing you gave, and you mentioned like for Johnny Wilkinson, he had a front row ticket to the Basta show. If there was ever a problem, front football, we need it, Basta, you can get it. And then you just give it from a different position. You were giving it from number 8. But I love the way that Tim, finally we have confirmation from Mathieu that actually the forwards, and we knew this already, but we've now got a back that's played forward has confirmed it, that the forwards work harder, they're actually smarter, there's more to deal with. And it made me always think as well, whenever I was doing scrum practice or line out practice, and I would look over and see the backs doing like kicking practice and just kicking the ball, but I was like, oh man, I would love to be a back. It'd be so much easier. So it must have been strange for you, having gone from the kicking practice and then going, oh shit, what am I doing over here pushing in scrums, which is not fun. For any position, front row is different, but back row isn't fun either. But the one man, when we look back at those two long days, we've touched on some players. The one man that everybody also loves talking about is Mourad, Monsieur Boujalal, your old president. Yeah. And again, you were telling me a couple of nice stories, but like you must have some great stories which involve him as well from over the years at Toulon.
Mourad is a great character. You love him, you hate him, but you have to respect him. What he achieved in Toulon, what he did for the club, for the city, you have to respect that. And me, I remember after the first Champions Cup we won in Dublin, and we said we don't go out because we have the semi-final against Toulouse the next week, and we stay in the hotel, and we celebrate in the hotel. 2 a.m., 3 a.m., we lost the trophy. No trophy in the hotel. And we asked the security, where is the trophy? He said, oh, Mourad take him. Why take him? So we have to go in the, find the Mourad room, and we take back the trophy, maybe for 2 hours. And he called the security of his security man. He said, bring back the trophy. We say, okay. We let the trophy to Mourad. But after all the bills, all the champagne, beer, we put on his room bill. we put everything on his room in the morning before. He said, oh, I don't understand why I have to pay that.
And it's a different era now at Toulon, and you are the team manager now. So how are you finding life after playing in that role? And give us an idea of what your job kind of involves on a day-to-day basis.
Oh, yeah, it's totally different for me. It was a good opportunity. Me, I wanted to maybe play another season or stop and coach under 18. But I felt my body was, you know, it was too difficult for me to play in another season. So I wanted to, you know, to coach under 18. And the coach, Pierre Mignoni, asked me if I want to stay with him as under team manager. You know, team manager, it's, you know, I know Tom Whitford, you know, but you never know all the job you have to do as a team manager. So for me, it was, I take that like a new challenge and stay close to the team, to the new player, new generation. I try to give advice what it means to play for Toulon, because Toulon is not the it's a place very very different than another play in France. You have a lot of pressure from the fans. You know, we say every time it's like Marseille in football. The people here are very passionate. They love rugby. They love their club, and they don't like when you cheat. When some me, I remember when I signed for Toulon, I had maybe 1 year of for my adaptation at the city in the team. So me, I try to facilitate for the player and give some identity to the team.
And there's no better man for the job. That's the point. That's why Pierre has asked you to come back. You are the link between the staff and the players, the history and the players. You're there also like for the general mental health, for their installation, getting them settled, pastoral care, the whole nine yards. So it's a massive job. And I guess the question to you is, like, you're doing this all for everyone else. I know your missus is about to drop with kid number three as well. I've been in the same situation. It's a hard stint at the end when you do finish. So how are you finding in general the transition from playing to a completely different role? Has it been easy? Are you finding it difficult? Are you enjoying it?
In the beginning, I take maybe one or 2 months to take my place, because when you play during maybe 16, 70 years, You did this every day, every single day. When you are in your office, alone in your office for the first time in your life, it's totally strange. But like I said, I take that like a challenge. I change, you know, my routine. Now I have more time for my kids. You have pressure, but the pressure is different, because me, it's all the organization, the logistics around the team. So you have the pressure of if the flight is late, or the bus is late, or something like that. When you are a player, you are just focused on what you have to do. That's okay. It's okay. I'll deal with that. My wife is a little bit. She's not happy because
they never are.
She's not happy because she said that you travel like when you play. I say yes, because I have to be here. I say, but it's like when you play. So what I win in this story? I say you say when I ask you, you say me yes. So now it's too late.
And I'm assuming you've told her about this weekend.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I have to walk. I go to Scotland for the game.
You call that work? You go to the Scotland with Johnny?
Yeah. I say, I go for a walk.
Johnny will show you a good time, I'm sure, and call it work. But finally, Mathieu, obviously it's early days. You're doing bits in the media, doing some corporate stuff with Johnny, as we just mentioned, team manager at Toulon. You also said you wanted to coach the under-18s at Toulon. So have you had a chance to kind of map out what you might like to do in the future, or is it a case of just trying lots of different things at the moment? Would you like to be, I mean, Rafael Ibanez is the team manager at France. Is that the goal? Would you like to be a head coach, a positional coach?
No, at this moment of my career, I didn't know if I'm going to come back for play or not with my injuries. So I open, you know, I put on the table all the opportunity I can have. It's why I start last year coaching little bit under 18, and I like that. But it's like the same when he asked me for the team manager, and it was new, and now I like that. So sometimes you have to take some decision. At this moment, I'm a team manager of Toulon. I don't have time to coach the under 18, but maybe in 2 years, 4 years, if I won't stop, I know I can have the opportunity to do this in Toulon, because they are very nice with me. But I don't have a goal to be the team manager of the French team, or no. I'm happy to be in Toulon. I just want anything I can do for, you know, put Toulon like when I played in the top place in Europe, and you know, recreate something that I think we lost those years. Now it's my only goals now.
Matija, thanks so much for coming on and talking to us, and good luck this weekend with the work, if we can call it that,
yeah,
with Johnny.
It's a work.
Hopefully you get to see a France win anyway at Murrayfield.
Yes, that is going to be a tough game.
Win or lose, your work wife will show you a good time in Edinburgh anyway, so it's fine.
Your only role is to make it back, mate, because you've got number three dropping next week, is to not drink too much whiskey, enjoy the game, make it back safely, and get home for the birth of your third child. So, mate, well done. Thanks all for joining us, and looking forward to this weekend. Should be epic.
Yeah, thank you.
Cheers, Matija.
Cheers.
We covered a lot of bases there with Matija, but your work husband, Johnny?
Work wife. I don't know what we are.
Whichever way around you are, yeah.
We're gender fluid these days. I don't know what we are. He's probably Big Spoon, though. Let's not kid ourselves. He's a big old boy. Mate, great to have him on. He's a great egg and loved by everyone over here. And again, he had that sort of, when he was playing, like the image of like big, like baddie, you know, big bastard. Like he's a big softy, really nice boy. And yeah, like again, doing different bits. So working away with Toulon, he's obviously been a legend of the club, legend of the French team. He's now setting up his own bits. I was filming with him yesterday. So if you go on YouTube, if you're a French, if you can speak a bit of French and tap in Basta Show, you'll find his new show. He did week one with Baptiste Sarand to preview France-Ireland. We did This Week in French to preview Scotland-France. So he's dipping into different bits, and like all of us, just finding his feet. But a top man and an absolute legend of the game.
So let's carry on looking ahead to Scotland-France then. You're obviously going to be there with Basta. What did you make of Scotland last week, Johnny? Much has been said about it in the days afterwards. What did that second half from Scotland say to you about them?
It's hard. I think it shows what we already knew about Scotland, which is that they can be absolutely fantastic and on their day, give everyone a run for their money, and then they can be not fragile, but they're also, you can take them. You know, if you've got power and you generate intensity like Basta alluded to, you can pressurize them on the gain line. They then get squashed and they panicked a little bit in Cardiff, gave away penalties. I think it was something like 14 or 15 on the trot. So there's nothing we didn't know. When they have ball and they're up against easy opposition, easy. Gatland, by his own admission, that first half, that's the worst 40 minutes of rugby he's ever produced as a coach. They were shambles. They won no line out ball, no platform. Their kicking game was embarrassingly poor, and it was easy for Scotland. You had Ben White, his kicking game, superb. Finn Russell as well, superb. And Scotland didn't really have to do much to click into gear. And when they did, they're outstanding. Second half, and this is where the PTSD came in, 26 unanswered points. You're 27-0 up. If that's New Zealand or South Africa, it's a 60 or 70 point game. I don't care who the opposition are. They just foot on the throat and they crack on and they demolish you, where Scotland allowed them a foothold back into the game and Wales took it. 26 unanswered points in the second half. So Jekyll and Hyde, and it doesn't move us any further forward. Again, for the historians, they'll look back in five games' time and it doesn't matter what happened. It's a box tick. They won that game, first time in 20 years, that they've won in Cardiff. So that's all positive. But the sort of manner, is it? The manner of it still doesn't leave me completely convinced that Scotland are able to dine at the top table consistently with your South Africas, your New Zealands, your Frances and your Irelands. That's still my worry. That being said, they're at home this weekend where they have a recent decent track record against the French. They will feel confident, but I worry about this French team going over there, that they have been prodded and it's a sort of hornet's nest that's about to be unleashed. And if there is one area that Scotland won't be able to cope with France, it is that power game. It is up front, gain line collisions, Dante, Fiku, midfield, it's Greg Aldrich coming around the corner, it's Antonio at scrum time, it's that power. A little bit less so in the second row now. It looks like they might go with Walkie and Gabriel Lag if they don't go too laggy, but that's the one bit that worries me for Scotland, is that power game.
You mentioned that. Obviously, Scotland have got their injuries as well. Richie Gray, Luke Crosby out, but Grant Gilchrist, Rory Darge back. So arguably, they might be improved in that respect. But certainly, if that is the swap, it's not losing too much, perhaps, in depth on the bench. France's selection, we mentioned it a little bit with Mathieu. You said it there. If it's Gabriel Agüero, is that underpowered a little bit? Would you not go for someone a bit more physically dominating? And you mentioned Halagar, who might be on the bench.
Yeah, for Scotland, is sort of much of a muchness. The only danger, I would say, like Crosby being out, is more of a physical presence. Darge then brings you the turnover presence of an out-and-out open side, which they maybe didn't have last week. So that is, if France have a bigger pack, do you maybe lack in speed? Therefore, there's opportunity for somebody like Darge, who is exceptional over ball, to generate that turnover ball that's so hard to defend against. So like Darge, for me, brings a real point of difference for Scotland. For France, it's weird. I mean, yes, maybe if you're removing a big old unit like Paul Vallemse at five, you're bringing in Walkie, but then you're maybe probably boosting that line out that was shocking against the Irish. So you maybe have a little bit less power, but you're getting back your set piece and your ball at source, which you didn't have last week, which gives you a foothold in the game. So I don't know, everything to be balanced. Then obviously you got too laggy, and maybe Matthias, as he alluded to, Halagu coming off the bench, but they're very young. This is the thing, like Manny Miafu would be more of a sure thing, I would say, like more game time, more experience, more know-how around big games, having been there and done it for Toulouse, whereas Tulagi and Lagu, it's a different level they've been playing at this year. So yeah, maybe a little bit in power shift out the starting team, but mate, they need to shore up their line out. So you could see why they would bring those two boys in to start in the second row.
And are you predicting a France backlash? Are you predicting a Scotland win? Where is it going to be more than the last? Is it that physicality again, or do you think Scotland can play around France?
I don't know. You look at, for instance, the try that Scotland generated, where Finn Russell essentially walked under and gave Duhan van der Merwe a two-on-one. And that comes from the distance of pass from nine to a cell, eliminating defenders, and then a second phase repeating the same with that pod of Tuipulotu, Hugh Jones, and Finn Russell at the back. That's their pivot, and that's how they generate space. If they're allowed to do that at Murrayfield, I think it could be difficult for France. If France get the upper hand physically and with their blitz defense at the full complement of 15 men on the field, I think they could beat Scotland at Murrayfield. But weirdly, I think Scotland go into this game as favourites, which I probably wouldn't have said, or generally wouldn't say, but I just think, given there hasn't been too much change to the Scottish backroom staff, the players all know each other inside out, France has a little bit of transition uncertainty, and therefore that knocks confidence. Either they come out health leather and they obliterate everything, or they come out and they get things wrong. And against Finn Russell, you don't want to be overreading, overchasing and getting things wrong. And that's where they might just have one or two opportunities that they create by defensive creaks. As we mentioned, the defensive record, 4 tries in the last couple of games. And I feel like that might be exploited by Scotland. Also, like you look at how they wanted to kick against the Welsh, I think Scotland will go to the air, try and pressurise the French back three, and they won't give them anything. So I think it'll be a tough old game, tight, but I think Scotland might just nick it, which I know won't appease or please our French followers and fans, but that's where I'm going this weekend.
And a very quick word on the other games. You were pretty scathing about England last week, so I'm guessing you weren't too impressed by them against Italy. Do you think they'll beat Wales at Twickenham?
Yeah, I do. And I think they'll have too much. I still don't think they show that much, and that they're probably playing within themselves with the systems and structures and attacking templates that they're using. But I still feel, even at maybe 85% of their full capacity, they will beat Wales at Twickers. And then the other team that I was really pleased for and impressed for were Italy. Under Gonzalo Quesada, I mean, they're going to Ireland, they're not going to win in Dublin, but that was a big positive statement performance. I know they lost the game, but touching distance of beating England. And I was really chuffed for Gonzalo Quesada. Coming in, new coach, well received by everybody, positive display. So it was really enjoyable to watch them play some nice stuff against English as well.
Thanks, Johnny. Big thanks to Matthew Bastro for joining us. And thanks to all you guys for listening. Make sure you hit subscribe, leave us a nice review if you can, check us out on Rugby Pass and on YouTube, and we'll be back with another episode next week. Au revoir, Johnny.
Cheers, mate.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.